The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
All right, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are coming at you as part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find everything from Cold Omaha on at Cold Omaha MN on Twitter. If you use Amazon, go to www.coldomaha.com/Amazon. Everything that you do will be normal for your Amazon situation.
Yeah, experience.
There you go. That's the word I was looking for. Everything will be the same for you, but we get a little bit of a kickback from that. So that's coldomaha.com/Amazon. Check it out. Support the network, and we appreciate that very much. I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. And the other voice that you heard here helping me get some of these words out is Tom Schreier, co-founder of coldomaha.com.
I'm here for you.
And you can find him on Twitter at tschreier3. Tom covered a Timberwolves win last night.
Yep.
And so He's bringing some good luck. Hopefully, he can bring some good luck for this podcast as well. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's always fun to see Thibodeau after a win.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I call him the Angry Penguin, and he actually looked pretty happy last night after the game. We do have a very fun show planned for you. It is Hall of Fame ballot season, so even though there is not a ton going on with the Local 9, it is still New Year, not necessarily teams not making moves, but it has been pretty quiet across the league. But we are bringing in Pioneer Press Twins reporter Mike Berardino. You can find him on Twitter at Mike Berardino. Mike, how are we doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you guys?
Good. I can't complain, Tom. I suspect you can't either.
No, doing well.
Good.
I heard the word kickback in there, and that always makes me think of corrupt politicians. So I hope you guys aren't going in that direction.
Yeah, no. At least not on the record.
Okay.
We had to brave the elements a little bit to get in here today. It's a little nasty out, but we still are going to bring you a very fun show, and it's going to excite a lot of people on Twitter, I think, especially Ryan Thibodeau, who I believe goes by the handle Not Mr. Tibbs, but he is collecting Hall of Fame ballots, and our very own Mike Berardino here has his, and we're going to break that down a little bit. Mike, how many years have you been voting for the Hall of Fame?
Well, it was interrupted for several years when I was at the South Florida Sun Sentinel because we had a policy there. One of our sports editors thought it through, and there was a period there where a number of papers were not allowing reporters to make the news, which is probably sound. And so I went a number of years in the middle part of the last decade without voting, while holding a ballot. I guess coming up on a decade of eligibility so far, because you have to be a member for 10 years, and I never actually got the card until 98. So anyway, that's last few years since I've been at Pioneer Press, they allow us to vote.
And how long do you debate or think about who you're going to vote for? Is it a pretty easy process for you, or do you spend a lot of time agonizing over your selections?
I do it in about 5 minutes. No, it can be as agonizing as you make it. I've been guilty in my life of overthinking some things, and
sure.
I also don't like to go back on things unless I have a real strong reason to do so. You see these reports of people voting for people 1 year and taking them off the ballot the next year. I try to, once you get the nod from me, I try to stick with you until your eligibility expires, and that's easier now because of the 10-year rule instead of 15. But after a while, you see a guy's just buried in the standings, and he's just stuck somewhere between the 5% you need to stay on and say 20%. There are guys like that, and I think there's some of my brethren will say, well, it's a wasted vote at that point. I'm not going to keep putting the person on. But I just think once I have opted in on somebody, unless it's not like they went out last year and hit 150 because they're retired.
Yeah, I've always been a little puzzled by that with the concept of guys who or gals, frankly, that will play hopscotch with their ballot as far as voting for a player 2 years, not 1 year, then again another year. It's like, well, you know, like Jack Morris, for instance, in the last 15 years has not won a ball game. He hasn't lost a ball game, hasn't given up an earned run, but he also hasn't won any ball games. And I just feel like, if you do the legwork, and again, I'm sure that the ballot limit of 10 players that you can check probably plays into that in some respects, but I just feel like, yeah, once you decide a player is a Hall of Famer, to kind of like vacillate or waffle on that just strikes me as a little bit strange. Because again, too, you know, yeah, they're not playing in the meantime. So, can you think of any players though where you've been tested as far as are they or aren't they? Because I feel like part of the Hall of Fame discussion, besides the statistics, is you know, if you look back in the guy's career and you just say, ah, yeah, I watched a Hall of Famer when that player played. Were there any players that really tested you in that respect in the last few years?
As far as taking them off the ballot, possibly.
Well, like, or just maybe you agonized over that last vote. You know, some people might say that for Trevor Hoffman or Gary Sheffield.
Certainly, you're always going to do that. And I don't want to give anything away here because I'd like to go one by one with seven. I voted for seven this time. The last few years, I got 10. I filled out the ballot with 10, and that's the maximum we can vote for. I was public with the idea that I think we should, you know, I thought it was a good idea when we were, as an entity, requesting to be able to expand to 12 yes votes per year, and because it just became a glut of talent that was there was a backlog of worthy Hall of Famers in my estimation and many others' minds, and we're still at 10. And as far as somebody that you know, the last couple of years I would have looked at and been tempted to go against my word and take off the ballot after having put them on. You'd only really do that if you were running out of slots, mm-hmm. first of all. And this year I did not feel I was running out of slots, and I'll explain further as we get into this. But last couple of years, you know, I chose to go with the strategic ballot 2 years ago, much to the chagrin of Pedro Martinez and Randy Johnson fans, who somehow thought they had a chance to be 100% approval rating, and that was not the case. I did that to keep Alan Trammell's dream alive and Larry Walker at the time. Mm-hmm. Alan Trammell has since fallen off the ballot after last year. I do think that that's one of those for sure. As a younger person, I thought I was watching a Hall of Famer throughout his career. The modern metrics validate that, and just a variety of ways to look at it. And I still am amazed that both Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell are not in the Hall of Fame, but they're not. And that's it for the ERAs committee to handle.
Do you think the Veterans Committee is going to validate your view in Trammell? I feel like they probably will eventually. But where do you stand on
that? I'd like to say that, and I'd like to be able to say that, you know, if they have enough, if they can get 75% support in that 12 votes out of 16, when Jack Morris comes along. I did not vote for Jack in his final crack at it. It was agonizing because he's local and you got to see him every day, and, mm-hmm. and he knows I didn't vote for him, but he just had a 7-year period there toward the end where he was putting up numbers across the board that were more Rick Mailer than Hall of Fame quality. I did a study of that. Essentially, his final 7 years were Rick Mailer with some really good postseason moments, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, 105 ERA plus, that's not gonna set you apart for a career.
No, and I don't want to spend this time bashing Jack, but that's a guy that I wouldn't be aghast if someday he is put in by the ERAs committee. The problem is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think anybody that the baseball writers passed on has been put in subsequently, any so-called errors corrected among players besides Ron Santo in the last decade or so. And it's become harder and harder to satisfy those guys. Tony Oliva falling a vote short and Dick Allen falling just short when put to the test of those on those committees. And there's a screening committee, and there's several layers it takes just to get to the final decision-making. But you see, with people want to bash the current system, which, granted, is not perfect, but they want to bash baseball writers for being irresponsible or not putting in their favorite players. And then when their favorite players are turned over to this smaller group of Hall of Famers and astute people in general and true baseball people, with a couple of media people along during the process, they're not getting in any easier. And so if anything, it's become more of a quixotic dream. So I think I just think that we all, for the most part, by and large, virtually everyone, I think, does agonize over this process, wants to get it right, and then also agonizes and cringes at the way it's become a parlor game for social media.
Yeah.
As we post, we do not have, at this point, we are not beholden as a voting entity to explain or even reveal our ballot, and yet when we do so, it's just so predictable that there's a certain segment out there just frothing at the mouth, waiting to tear it down, and that's their prerogative. But there should be a little bit of, well, at least you outed yourself, at least you explained your ballot in some cases, or just shared it, and I think there's value in that. And a part of that is we now have these sites like Not Mr. Tibbs that give you an idea, exit poll wise, how it's looking. But even there, we see a big adjustment come the actual revelation day.
Well, before we dive into your ballot, there is one person I want to ask about. Do you think Marvin Miller will eventually get in via the Veterans Committee? Because I think that's obviously one of their biggest omissions so far.
Huge oversight. Massive. And it seems like he's gone now. Would have been wonderful to put in Marvin Miller while he was alive.
Yeah, what, 4 or 5 years ago now, I think? 2012?
For several years. It became an annual thing when it was an annual possibility where he would have to give a very difficult interview later in his years. I have massive respect for him, and any player who's ever come along should certainly have massive respect for him because he created the system that has enriched them all. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, there's enough people, obviously, who had to write those checks or who resent the way money went because maybe they didn't make the money, or maybe they're pre-free agency, whatever. And so he's not in. I believe Marvin Miller should be in. Eventually, when it's time to start for them, this would be their question as a years committee. I believe Bill James should be in.
Sure.
You can say sure because we speak the same language, but that's going to be a tough one. I've run that by some other baseball writers, and we're not going to get the vote on that. But some of them, older school, are very resistant to that idea. We'll see what the kind of voters that are put on those committees feel about it. But you talk about a launching a revolution. Bill James did that.
Well, so let's dive right into your ballot. You had said to me that you wanted to divulge it in a specific way, and let's just roll with it. I personally did a ballot as well. Again, this is a hypothetical one because I'm not a member of the BBWA, at least not yet. But I did one for myself too, so I will play along in the best way I can. But let's hear it.
All right. We'll go alphabetically, and we have seven, and we don't want to belabor each one, but and some of them are pretty obvious, I would say. But I voted again for Jeff Bagwell, and it does look like from the exit polling that this will be the year, and he just fell a few percentage points short last year. And that's one where I'm on record that there's no legitimate PED reason to keep Jeff Bagwell out of the Hall of Fame. There are no true links close enough for me, at least. It's just a hearsay, and I definitely felt I was watching a Hall of Famer along with Biggio all those years. I got to cover those guys and interview them a number of times and watch them live, and of course the numbers just jump off the page. He's a no-doubter to me.
His 1994 is unthinkable. 368 average, 451 on base, 750 slugging percentage. I mean, that's just unconscionable. He was 3 batting average points away from being a 3-4-5 guy. And what I mean by that is 300 average, 400 on base, 500 slugging. When I look at slash lines, I like that kind of symmetry or whatever you want to call it. For me, that's a no-doubter, too. I'm going to put a check mark next to my Bagwell. I had him a little ways down my list. I didn't have a very scientific list. I did vote for 10, and I had 3 honorable mentions, but I'm with you on Bagwell.
All right, and we're going to move into the second row and jump all the way to the M's, and I realize I'm leaving some people out here, and we can circle back maybe at the
sure.
end on the omissions.
Yeah.
I once again have voted for Edgar Martinez, who did play the early part of his career at third base and was, by the metrics, maybe a little better than we remember, and certainly had a hit in a terrible Kingdom environment for the first part of his career, and in Safeco was no bargain for hitters. And those adjustments, the fact that we can adjust for park and league competition and environment. He's, once again, a Hall of Famer in my book. We'll see if he can get there. You know, last year he was down in 43%. It looks like in the exit polling he's jumping up this year, but I'm not sure he's going to quite get there. And he's starting to run out of chances here. Mm-hmm. I believe he has one more after this.
Yeah, it's a 3-4-5 guy, more walks than strikeouts. You know, didn't give you anything defensively because he didn't play defense towards the end of his career. But offensively, I see a Hall of Famer there as well. What do you make of his coming up late? I know that I saw one of the Roto-World guys was upset about how he had wrecked the PCL as like a 25 or 26-year-old, and Seattle still didn't see fit to bring him up full-time until, let's see, 1990. He would have been 27. Was his first game playing more than 100? His first year playing more than 100 games. Incidentally, Fangraphs has him as 5.5 wins above replacement that year. So obviously, he hit the ground running once given full time playing time. Do you hold against him or against the Mariners that they should have gotten him going earlier? Because for me, you know, he wasn't that great of a hitter when he did come up. He would have needed maybe an adjustment period either way, but if anything, I think it's more remarkable he became a Hall of Famer with a lot of strikes against him, including a late peak and DHing for most of his career.
Yeah, I don't see how you could factor in the career arc for a player. That the career is the career, and if there were politics that kept him out or who he was blocked by or whatever, you know, those are some bad Mariner teams. So you know, if he was ready, I think they would have brought him up. But it didn't happen that way, like you say, once he did come up, it didn't take long for him to dominate. And you know, subsequently, I mean, I used to hear from scouts too. I mean, the eye test during his career about how difficult he was to pitch to, and they just marveled at his hands and he could get to any pitch and all that. But all that aside, because obviously you want to take the emotions out of it or the biases out of it and try to get to the truth of the matter. And a 68.3 career WAR is more than enough. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's being, you know, there is an adjustment within that for position or lack thereof. And he consistently gets my vote. And I think it might take him to the last try, but I think he just might get in.
All right, so I had I had Edgar on my ballot as well. Who do we got third for you?
Another M, Mike Messina will get my vote again, and did get my vote, and that's one that too. I just think that you know, clear, consistent excellence without the off the chart year or the hardware necessarily, but you know, throughout his career in the AL East, which band boxes and tremendous teams and competition and he just was excellent throughout from day one and you know, he ends up with 83 career WAR, and that's, you know, easily clears the bar, and there's a resistance among those who want to see more in the counting stat area, but even then he got to 270 wins, so you know, the ERA may be a little higher, but again, the adjusted ERA 123, and AL East was a monster, a workplace, and that was his primary workplace. That was, you know, those were the parks within the division throughout. So, really, I don't know why there'd be such a struggle for him. He was at 43% last year, and this is year five, and it does seem like. You know, he should. Why is this year four? And it does seem like he should get there eventually. But Willie, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like he's on that trajectory where it ends up getting him there. It is again a little strange that guys can vary so much. You know, some guys who started 9% and end up getting to 75% is bizarre, or 15% to 75% in the span of 5 or 6 years. It always kind of strikes me as strange, but. It's the world we live in, so it's just kind of the way it is. I have Messina on there as well. So 3 for 3 so far to match up our ballots. At some point, obviously, there's going to be some difference, but who do you got fourth?
Another one here. This has become the big public push, but I've had him on every year since I returned to voting. And since I came to Pioneer Press, and that's Tim Raines, got to cover him briefly at the end of his career. And he was actually a Marlin, and he was also a Yankee for a bit, and I was on the great Yankee teams. But I remember him from the 80s. I watched him on television in the 80s, and remember 1 year where he had the suspension, and I don't hold against him off-the-field transgressions, because those only hurt himself in terms of cocaine suspension. And he went 1 year without a spring training, and I think he had to wait until May 1st, and he showed up. I believe he tripled and went nuts in his first game, and that game was televised. And just he was just, if not for Ricky Henderson, he would be the greatest leadoff hitter of all time, because he drew a ridiculous number of walks, and he could test you on the bases, and he just brought value. Didn't have a great arm, but there's certainly brought more than enough value in a career that clocked in at 69.1 WAR, according to Baseball Reference, and I think it does seem like he's going to get in.
Okay, so I obviously also had Tim Raines. I think, obviously, I agree with everything you said there. One of the preeminent leadoff hitters of the game, overshadowed a bit by Ricky Henderson, who, did things a little differently. A few more stolen bases, but at the same time, too, yeah, Raines was phenomenal. So who do you have fifth?
Well, yeah, we're just doing alphabetically, so it's not the order that I felt.
No. I just mean we've already got four.
Number five, among those that got the check, this is one of the first-timers, and this is one that I really had to spend more time on, because the first time I had a chance to vote for him, it's a guy I did cover for 1 year with the Marlins, and that's Pudge Rodriguez. What a year that was in 2003 on either side of it. Guy, mostly on the four side, he had a tremendous career. No brainer. This is the only thing that can keep him off of this, it would seem, is PED suspicion linked only to Jose Canseco's book. And of course, this other aspect that people seem to be giving credence to, a non-answer when asked if Pudge was on that day. I guess he was asked in 2009 when it started to come out about David Ortiz and others showing up on survey testing in 2003. And he was asked if he was on that. And among those 100-plus that tested positive, and he said, only God knows. And somehow this is going to be enough for people, a certain segment of people, to keep him off their ballot when he clearly is one of the greatest all-around catchers we've seen. And for me, I did give it time. I did search for anything else I could find, because as you've noticed from some of the names that I've left off, we'll circle back at the end, but I do have my own personal standards of PED, how much PED connection is too much, sort of thing, and I still cling to that. But Pudge is, he makes it in for me. It'll be interesting to see how many others agree.
Yeah, it's remarkable that how much of his value comes from defense. And I don't know if that would be lost on people or not, but as far as a hitter, Fangraphs has him as a weighted runs created plus of 104 for his career. Now, the peak was very good. He obviously came up very young. I believe, 19. I think he debuted at 19 with the Rangers in 91. Five of the first six seasons were below average as far as weighted runs created plus. And then for the finale, 8 seasons in a row, it looks like, or at least 7 of, again, below average. But the peak was very good. The defense was very good. He's in for me as well. But, again, I think it is a little bit remarkable how much his overall numbers sag from his peak when you consider his beginning and end aging curve. But, so far, 5 for 5, we sync up as far as votes.
He, you look at the WAR that he produced, there was a drag there at the end. It would have been better for him, possibly, just to call it a career at age 36 in 2008. That's when it really started to drop off.
Yeah,
once
for
he
sure.
was traded to the Yankees. But didn't really do a whole lot those last few years. But, it just in your mind's eye and then on the black and white page of the numbers and just, peers, everything that people would say, he was a game changer.
Yeah, and it looks like it was 7 years that he was under 100 for that last stretch. So, yeah, if you cut out that last three, it looks a lot better.
Yeah. The next one, I think we can talk about from a few different angles, but I'm sticking with this vote. This is one where it looks like a number of my fellow voters took him off, but for nothing that had to do with revisiting his career, but for his public utterances and social media outspokenness and, in some cases, foolishness. Mm-hmm. That's Curt Schilling. I stuck with him on here because I don't want to vote vindictively, and I don't want to put myself into it as a journalist. That, you know, he could insult any number of career or fields, and that, you know, if he had the same sort of enmity for actuarials or actuaries, I don't think there'd be any more reason to take him off. This is an interesting one because there is the character clause that is part of our directive, and it's where I come off with the PED adjustments that I have to make. That everybody has to live with their own ballot and their own beliefs. But Curt Schilling got the check for me again. If he made it through this past off season, I suppose I will have to continue supporting him until he gets there. The postseason numbers and contributions are staggering, and as he missed a ton of bats in that career, and doesn't matter to me if he was a terrible teammate. Doesn't matter to me what his political leanings are, short of actively following through on any of this anger and doing something tangible or that would put him in the legal system that would really activate the character clause, he gets the check.
Yeah, you know, it is a fine line because, I mean, you know, you can claim that he has said a lot of very terrible things. I don't think anybody's going to deny that, right down to the journalism claims or journalist claims. I mean, but frankly, is the character clause based on something that has happened or empty threats on social media? It does make it a gray area, I think. But, as far as on the field, there's little doubt in my mind that if they've allowed a lot of other players in who have similar black marks against their checkered pasts, I don't think you can hold tweets against Curt Schilling as much as they've been offensive, reprehensible, downright awful. I've seen people online with takes of, yeah, he just had one or two good seasons. I don't know how anybody rational can look at his career and come away thinking that. He's a surefire Hall of Famer for me too. So 6 for 6 so far as synchronizing between our ballots, which doesn't surprise me. It'll be interesting when we circle back here and we go over some of the ones I have that you don't. But in my mind, Schilling is absolutely a no doubt Hall of Famer.
This might be a good time to say exactly what I'm talking about when I mention that character clause.
Sure.
Under the BBWAA rules for election to the National Baseball Hall of Fame, we receive the same letter every year that. And these same directives are on the back of the letter, and there are 9 of them this year. And number 5 is, it says, voting. Voting shall be based upon the player's record, playing ability, integrity, sportsmanship, character, and contributions to the team on which the player played. Now, there's 8 other areas here, and they're all pretty much boilerplate, but that one is, if the Hall of Fame were to remove that number 5, and especially when it comes to character or sportsmanship or integrity, which are very difficult to, certainly impossible to quantify and very difficult to wrap your arms around, that I think would alter the way the votes go year by year. But for now, we still have these, and the people who just say, well, you should ignore that. Be like the NFL, which will put anybody in, OJ's in, mm-hmm. whatever, Warren Moon. It's they don't have this breakdown. They don't have this directive coming from the Pro Football Hall of Fame the way we do in baseball. So that's my That's my contribution on that part of it. Now, number seven, the final vote, the final check mark for me this year went, again, to a guy we've mentioned already, a holdover, a guy who's just not getting much love. And I understand why, because when I watched his career, I, especially the part that happened in Colorado, you know, it was easy to say, Coors Field creation. I used to throw out that phrase all the time. There were a number of them, Coors Field creations. Vinny Castilla is not going into any halls of fame. Andres Galarraga got the
Dante
unusual.
Bichette.
Yeah, Dante Bichette, and on. You know, even Walt Weiss had a period where he was a good hitter there. So, but Larry Walker didn't just play there, and he finished, he went on to St. Louis, and he, of course, the years in Montreal. He did have a ton of injuries, and I think that's the thing that his inability to stay on the field certainly hurts the counting stats, but the rate stats and the contribution, the fact that we have the ability through wins above replacement and through the gamut of park and league adjustments you can make, we have the ability to show that Larry Walker wasn't an all-world player just at Coors Field. He was everywhere for the vast majority of his career, and that's how you end up with a 72.6 WAR, according to Baseball Reference, which is, again, well above the bar that you need to get people's attention on something like this. So, you know, the tools are all there. Five-tool guy, everybody likes to talk about. We'll circle back in a minute to Vladimir Guerrero. Everybody talks about Vladimir Guerrero's all-world tools. Larry Walker had a big arm, too, and had better range, I believe, and demonstrable in that regard, even with the early career broken leg. And I just when I was a little surprised a couple years ago when I came back to voting and I had to really parse this out 2013 after that season, and I've been voting for him since because the numbers guide me that way. And And I think we can be wrong about somebody within the context of their career because the narrative might not fit or the market might not fit or in his case, the ballpark that he really became associated with. It was a great hitting environment, but his splits weren't ridiculous. It wasn't like he could only hit at Coors Field. Again, he hit the before, during, and after. And he got the check again.
Yeah, I got him on there too. I've been banging the drum since I wrote an article about him on Fangraphs in his first year of eligibility. 16 straight years of 100-plus weighted runs created plus, 8 of those 140 or higher. Career mark of 140. If you tell me that a guy is 40% better than his contemporaries offensively, chances are I'm going to be all about that person as a Hall of Famer as far as a hitter. Defensively, I believe I had asked around, and he was one of those right fielders that could throw people out at first base every now and then. That's the kind of strength of arm he had as far as I understand.
Yes, and he did that, and you know, he also was tremendously raw at the start of his career because he was a hockey guy, Canadian. He was a hockey find and had very little baseball instinct. And Gene Glynn, the Twins' third base coach, tells a great story about having Larry Walker, I believe, in the New York Penn League, the very start of his career, pretty much. And there was an instance when he tried to go first to third, or he had to tag up. But he was at first, and he rounded second. He went on his way to third, and the ball, the sinking liner, was caught, and he ended up retreating to first base by cutting directly across the infield behind the mound, and really didn't understand why that wasn't acceptable until Gene Glynn explained it to him later. But he had a good laugh. But that's how raw Larry Walker was. He dropped in from outer space as a baseball player, and he made up all of that ground and then some, and allowed his natural talents to take over. And he did have a number of injuries, broken leg comes to mind early in his career, and a number of elbow problems throughout his career that he had. It was a battle for him just to stay on the field. For me, and again, the metrics would show that rate stats that when he was on the field, he was devastating.
That sounds like the cutting across the field, like something King Kelly would have tried back in the 1800s. Hall of Famer King Kelly.
Yeah, he's it was. I don't think he did it a second time. But,
no, probably not.
It's a pretty epic story.
Yeah. So he's in for me. And the big thing that cements it for me, that last year in Montreal, 322, 394, 587 slash. You're talking about a guy who had 3 4-plus win seasons and 2 3-plus win seasons in Montreal. This guy was going to be a monster no matter where he played. Again, with all the context-adjusted statistics, you also just look at what he had put up to that point by age 28 in Montreal. This guy was destined for stardom no matter where he played. And so, you know, for me, it's a no-doubt slam dunk Hall of Famer. So that's 7 for 7 between you and me. So let's circle the wagon, go back over some of the ones maybe you agonized, and I can fill in the blanks with my three, which probably are not going to be too terribly difficult for people to deduce at this point.
Well, you know, I've already well, the first thing you do, I would say, is you look at, there's also within the parameters that the Cooperstown people give us, they do remind us what year on the ballot people are and when it's their final year on the ballot. And Tim Raines, this is the last call for Tim Raines. And again, that was not a tough call for me because I've been voting for him consistently. But Lee Smith, I took one last look at him. I have never voted for Lee Smith before, and I wanted to make sure that I wasn't, you know, it is as Jay Jaffe has written, and he's the king of parsing out the numerical case for these guys, along with wonderful writing too, in advance of these. Those are must reads just to make sure you're not overlooking somebody. But and it is admittedly difficult to properly value closers. Now, Lee Smith bridged eras, and did go multi innings more than a lot of Trevor Hoffman or Billy Wagner, who I also left off the ballot, but I did not vote for Lee Smith again. I just didn't see enough above and beyond consistent excellence the way we're going to come upon with Mariano Rivera here in 2 years, and he will just fly in to the Hall of Fame. There's a clear separation there as a modern closer for him. But so to stay with closers, I had to really struggle with Trevor Hoffman and, along with that, Billy Wagner, and I'll tell you why, because Billy Wagner did not get nearly as much interest last year, 10.5%, as Hoffman did at 67%. And this is one where Wagner had a number of injuries, and he did not compile. You know, he threw 900 innings in his career, so didn't compile the total saves that Hoffman gets to 600 and sets a record that Mariano comes along and breaks. And so there's a lot of support for Trevor Hoffman. But Billy Wagner, by strikeouts per nine innings and just pure dominance and batting average allowed, whatever way you want to look at what he achieved when he was out there, he's right. And, of course, the WAR, the Baseball Reference WAR, Hoffman's 28.4 and Wagner's 28.1. And you also might play the game of, in their prime, if you had the chance to acquire one or the other. I don't know that this is foolproof on how you're going to decide which guy to vote for or not, but you know, which one would you rather have acquired in their prime if you're trying to win a World Series? I think I'd take Billy Wagner. But
no, he was almost a four-win Fangraphs closer in 1989 for the Astros. I mean,
tremendous.
Wasn't the strikeout era that we're in now, and he struck out 15 batters per nine innings that year. I mean, I had to think long and hard about Wagner. You know, I don't know about the standard of Mariano and nobody else, but I am also not really on board with Lee Smith, who, again, I know it's a different context, different situation, but his numbers are like Joe Biagini from the Blue Jays for his career from this past year. You know, again, I know that's mixing context, but I'm just, you know, if I need something to convince me, you know, a whole pile of saves is just not going to do it. And so
no.
It was a specialist who stayed healthy. Cheers to him for staying healthy. Don't get me wrong. You know, very few relievers stay healthy long enough to pile up 400 saves. But, you know, it just doesn't do it for me.
So, yeah, I mean, I did. So Lee Smith was not easy, but easier to omit. Trevor Hoffman, I do sense, is going to get in. That makes it a little easier. It's going to be borderline, but a little easier to leave him off the ballot because I don't think he necessarily needs me. But Billy Wagner kind of needs me because there's a fear that he could fall under the 5% threshold, and I think it would be terrible just terrible, a terrible development, Brandon, if Trevor Hoffman flies in on his second try and Billy Wagner, who essentially is a shade better, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. If you normalize for innings, he's better.
Yeah. So that connotes dominance, could fall off this ballot at the very least if he stays down in that same territory of 10 to 15%, which seems possible by the exit polling. Will he ever get traction? Because, again, next year Chipper Jones and Jim Thome and Omar Vizquel are going to come on the ballot. The year after Mariano comes on, Roy Halladay will get a look, Todd Helton, people like that. The year after that, Derek Jeter, Paul Konerko, Soriano to some extent. He's going to get lost. There's going to be a backlog. And if Hoffman, I'm just saying this, if there's a Hall of Fame induction speech someday for Trevor Hoffman, there should be one for Billy Wagner. I just pulled back and said I don't think either guy is quite there. Wagner, because of the lack of ability to stay on the field, only 900 innings over his career, and Hoffman for a lack of dominance, I suppose. The rate stats would indicate that, and there were periods where he did his job, certainly, over and over and over, but pitching in San Diego was a good place to pitch.
How much is Wagner stymied by the 10-vote maximum, though? I mean, do you think it matters at all? Again, because he's also coming into an age where the ballots are a bit backlogged. Again, I know you didn't use all 10 votes, but you have recently in years that Wagner's been eligible. So, I mean, how much do you think the 10-vote maximum hurts him?
Doesn't help.
Certainly.
I've seen references to Wagner here and there. I do think that people in general are comfortable leaving him off because of the lack of on-field time, the injuries that he had to overcome, similar to those who would omit Billy Wagner also can use a lot of the same justification, I guess, to leave off Larry Walker, apples and oranges, but based on everyday versus a closer, such a specialist. But again, I would just say a Hall of Fame that includes Trevor Hoffman should include Billy Wagner. And I just don't get the feeling that that's how it's going to go.
I agree with that. So notable omissions for you, obviously, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. They probably deserve each of their own breakdowns. So for, first of all, Bonds.
No, I would lump them together, Brandon.
Oh, really? Okay.
On any planet where you choose not to try to live up to voting directive number 5, and that integrity, sportsmanship, character. I just know that, and I realize that Barry Bonds spent a whole lot of money to get that perjury, one charge of perjury, overturned. And it did seem like that has bought him some more votes, coming back as a hitting coach and giving interviews and showing that he could be
the redemption tour.
Certainly there was an element of that. And he gave 10 really good minutes to me and a few others in a dugout in Fort Myers. But we thank him for that. But that shouldn't matter any more than it mattered that he blew everybody off when he was playing. It does not matter. But those of us who had to report through the Balco era and, of course, the McGuire-Sosa stuff and just the rampant just the cynicism of the era. I understand those who, right from the outset, have said they're not going to take any of that into account. The numbers are the numbers. I can understand that. That's consistent. But I have always attempted, and will continue to do so for now, to have a line of demarcation, and that is some sort of official smoking gun that's more than just back acne or mentioned in Jose Canseco's book, because there are some. Jose Canseco's percentage was pretty good in who he outed, but he also mentioned people like Maglio Ordonez, who we don't believe ever failed a drug test, whatever you think of how his physique was, and others that were mentioned in there. And by the way, Jose, nobody mentions this, Jose Canseco's book also says that Roger Clemens was the only player he ever played with who didn't cheat on his wife. And I believe that we've learned subsequently, Mindy McCready, most notably, that was just false.
The country music star, right?
he ruined her life. But that doesn't matter. None of that matters. But I'm just saying, if you want to say Jose Canseco, if you're in his book, you're dirty, so no pudge, see Mindy McCready.
True.
But as far as Bonds and Clemens, tremendous players. The best position player, the best starting pitcher of their time, in the time that I was covering baseball for the bulk of it. But the Balco thing, the McNamee hearings, you can buy your way out of things, or Stonewall Justice, whatever you think of Jeff Nowitzki. But that was a horrible, horrible time for the game. And the game lost untold numbers of fans in those periods. And I was in the park when Barry Bonds was doing many great things and amazing things. I was in the park covering Roger Clemens' first farewell tour at the World Series in 2003. Those are tremendous, tremendous players. But I have this line, and they fall beneath that line where I have to factor in smoking gun, I call it, connection to PEDs. You can call me an idiot and say it's just convenient thinking and pretzel logic, and maybe you're right. But for now, and I will have further test cases, no matter what the commissioner of baseball said about David Ortiz, those names that did come out from the survey testing year, which it still is so amazing, Brandon, that in the survey testing year of 2003, they just needed to stay below 5%. If everybody could just stay clean for 1 year and maybe take a hit with their numbers, the whole push to have drug testing with penalties in Major League Baseball would have gone away. Don Fear so strong at that time, and it was amazing he even allowed that. But that was the bar, 5%, and it ended up being something like 7.5%. They couldn't even stay under at that time. That's how just much a part of the landscape it was. But by the same token, 7.5% isn't everybody. And so this idea that, oh, everybody's doing it, well, there was survey testing, and it only came to 7.5%. And subsequently, Rob Manfred saying David Ortiz on his farewell tour should go into the Hall of Fame, essentially, because maybe his positive test on that leaked out from 03 of a survey testing may have been a mistake. So if you're saying 7.5% and it may have been a mistake, I know Barry Bonds never officially tested positive. Roger Clemens never officially tested positive. But we all know from Olympic sport experience, and I've covered three Olympics, the masking agents and the pharmacists, the cheaters, are always ahead of the testers, always.
Do you sense that your view on those players can change over the next couple of years? And if so, how difficult do you think the case will have to be made to you to make you change your mind?
I have tried to think that through. I don't have a blanket answer on that for you. It is possible, because our perception of eras will change. It doesn't matter if it's sports or business or music or anything. Our perceptions of eras change, where what would make us hold our nose in one era, one decade, might make us chuckle in another. But so what would it take? It would take possibly someone that we just assume was squeaky clean and has already been put in, maybe not even somebody who's squeaky clean, not to defame anyone, but let's just say, you know the obvious names, who some people say, well, you know, that he's in. If that person were to then come clean and say, I used, and it shouldn't matter, and Clemens and Bonds should be in, I'd have to think about it. If someone that we all assume was coming up in coming years, Chipper, Tony, you know, Mariano, Jeter, the no-brainers, as it were, if one of them were to be associated with or to make an admission, which would be incredible, in advance of election, you might have to revisit. And then, maybe you could think of another scenario that it would hit me between the eyes and I would say, well, this is just grossly unfair. I just think that I can't turn my brain off is the point. I think it's tempting and it's a way easier. And I see the fan, the typical fan, it seems, even the really informed fans, very much support, let the numbers talk, don't worry about the moralizing. But they don't look at number five on this breakdown the way I do and see that voting shall be based upon the player's record, playing ability, integrity, sportsmanship, character, and contributions to the team. I know for a fact that there have been dozens upon dozens of talented, traditional ball players, love the game just as much as Bonds and Clemens, had wonderful instincts perhaps, would run through a wall for you, had some level of opportunity in the majors and then petered out, had a normal career in some cases based on what their body would enable them to do and did not take it into their mid-40s where they were better than people in their mid-20s because they did not grab the shortcut that was available to them. There were shortcuts then, there are shortcuts now. We maybe do a little better job of weeding out those who are taking the shortcuts, but it's not comprehensive, and I understand that. But I'm not going to turn my brain off to things that do hit you between the eyes that are more than just circumstantial, and there was a very specific Balco case that millions of taxpayer dollars went toward, and I know in the end it didn't land people in jail, but Jason Giambi ended up apologizing for, without saying what he was apologizing for, and he was on those same lists. There were others, the Bobby Estrellas of the world, and that were Balco related, and Barry Bonds all over Balco. And we know what Victor Conte has said subsequently, and he was on ground zero of that. It's, again, the more I talk about it, I suppose the more ammo I give those who would say, shut up, just vote for the numbers. But for now, knowing, having covered so many that maybe could have taken the same fast track to glory or to career extension, and the money that was available at the time, even to a medium, ability player, was certainly tempting for all of them. I just keep coming back to that, and I try to safeguard that integrity aspect as much as I can, as I'm in charge with doing.
And so there are three players left that I think also merit some interest. All outfielders. You've got Vladimir Guerrero, Manny Ramirez, and Gary Sheffield. Any of those guys on your radar whatsoever? And if so, why? And if not, why not?
Well, Manny, multiple positive tests for a variety of PEDs in the modern testing era. Wonderful, wonderful hitter. Terrible outfielder, but wonderful, just tremendous hitter. One of the best right-handed hitters of all time. But same sort of aspect there. And the same thing will apply to Alex Rodriguez when he hits the ballot, barring a total revamp of the logic here. That's an easy one to eliminate. Gary Sheffield can say... And I covered Sheffield a little bit with the Marlins and interviewed him many times because he was an ex-Marlin, and I never had any problem with Sheffield. People say he's difficult. I think that shouldn't matter. He was actually a tremendous interview when he wanted to be. Mm-hmm. That doesn't matter. He's a wonderful hitter and not a really good defender. But, I read everything I could to revisit that again. I had never voted for him, and I was, again, open to the idea, but he falls beneath that bar for me because of the Balco connection. I remember him telling me the spring that he, after he had worked with Barry Bonds and how they lived together, I interviewed Sheffield as he sat next to Bonds at a boxing match. I think Roy Jones Jr. fought in Miami once, and they were together. They were inseparable that winter, and they had the same chef and everything, and Chef had a chef, and it was just going to be so wonderful, and Sheffield then subsequently says, well, I had no idea what that cream was, steroid cream. And I don't believe that. I'm not going to turn my brain off. How much did that take Gary Sheffield forward in the subsequent years? Not like his numbers went through the roof. I don't think that should matter either, what the payoff was. He's all over that Balco report. He's part of the Balco group. And if you're involved in Balco, demonstrably, you fell short for me. So at this point in the process. And then Vladimir Guerrero, we have zero PED reasons to leave him off. And he was certainly there were times throughout his career where you felt like you were watching a potential Hall of Famer. I always felt a little unsatisfied with the way things went for him. And I also had forgotten, I always felt like he left a good bit on the table for whatever reason, bad knees, bad back. That turf got him the way it got Andre Dawson, led to all those knee surgeries for Dawson. He eventually got in almost as a protest vote, I believe, but a deserving one. But Guerrero, I was surprised to read in the Jay Jaffe breakdown, maybe you noticed this too, defensively, his defensive war, because he spent so much of the second half of his career as a DH, including with the Rangers and even toward the Angels to end, Edgar Martinez ends up with more defensive value by a full win per game than Vladimir brought. So I think there's a lot of mythology around Vladimir's arm, not very good range, and couldn't play the position nearly as long as our mind's eye tells us.
Right.
And so I don't care that he threw people out with lasers in the early 2000s or in the first 5 years of his career. You know, you have to look at the totality of the career, and the totality of the career is he ends up at 59.3 WAR, and that's right around where Mike Piazza was, but Mike Piazza had the added benefit of greatest hitting catcher of all time. So I voted for Piazza, and I was borderline, right there on the border with Vladimir Guerrero. I chose to pull back this time to be a little more judicious with my voting. I don't feel any great reason to check 10 names because I can. There will be years when I wish I could check 12. That was the last few years. This year, Guerrero and Hoffman and Wagner were the last three that I easily could have checked. Those would have been the three. And I backed off in each case for the reasons noted above.
So to summarize your ballot, we have Bagwell, Edgar Martinez, Mike Mussina, Tim Raines, Ivan Rodriguez, Curt Schilling, and Larry Walker. Is that correct?
I wasn't listening that closely, but I'm going to assume you got it right.
I wrote them down, so I better have gotten them right.
Okay, I was taking a drink of water. But
we've kept you on a while. I understand.
I was talking a lot there, Brandon. I had to get some water. I'm going to get some more now. Go ahead.
Well, so basically that's all we got for you, Mike. We really appreciate it. We'll have you on again soon to see if there's any more resolution with Brian Dozier moving forward, or if there's going to be any kind of deal here where the Twins add a power bat or a reliever. But anyway, we really appreciate you coming on today, and thank you for joining us. And really, we like having you on here as often as we can.
Thank you for the forum, and we will now brace for the hailstorm from social media.
Well, I think you've got the chops to withhold it, but hopefully it'll go well for you.
Okay.
All right. Well, be well, Mike. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right. See you guys.
You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.